This is Whitley Strieber, and you're listening to Dreamland, the best program of its kind in the world. Why? Expert hosts William Henry on the secrets of the past, Jim Mars on politics and conspiracy, Ann Strieber on matters of the spirit, and me, Whitley Strieber, on aliens and UFOs and who knows what else. And our weekly science reporter, Emmy winner, Linda Moulton Howe. We say it like it is. We take you deeper down where the real secrets lie. Dreamland, welcome to the edge of the world. Today we have with us guest host Jim Mars on what I would describe as an emergency edition of Dreamland. That's right, it is an emergency edition of Dreamland for two reasons. First, there are troop movements being planned within the United States that we will be talking about shortly. Second, there are some remarkable events happening behind the scenes in the world of banking that you need to know about. Also, we're going to be talking about Jim Mars' book, Psi Spies, its publication, its earlier suppression, and just why was a book approved by the CIA published about remote viewing, the so-called history of remote viewing, and in the case of this book, I say history in quotation marks, in my humble opinion, and instead of Jim's book. Well, we're going to find out all about this hot stuff over the course of this edition of Dreamland. But Jim, first of all, I would like to welcome the world's leading authority on what goes on behind the scenes in our government and elsewhere, the author of Alien Agenda, the author of the greatest book ever written on the JFK assassination, Crossfire, the basis for the great Oliver Stone movie. Jim Mars, welcome to the show.
Well, Whitley, it's always a pleasure to be with you.
Jim, a few minutes ago, you sent me a letter, a copy of a letter from the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve to Patrick S. and Trim, Esquire, the Assistant General Counsel of the Bank of America. This letter is dated August the 20th. It is from Robert DeVee Frierson, Deputy Secretary of the Board of the Federal Reserve. And what it essentially is doing is it is allowing the bank to increase the amount of securities financing transactions that it is allowed to carry out. Normally, a bank and any single affiliate must limit the amount of these transactions to 10% of the bank's capital stock and surplus, and limit the overall amount of covered transactions between a bank and all of its affiliates to 20% of the capital stock and the surplus. This is because of the fact that the bank must maintain enough liquidity to meet its cash demands and other demands over the course of its business. For some reason that is not stated here clearly, the Bank of America has asked for and been granted a 30% of its the right to go up to something close to 30% of its total regulatory capital. It said that it will limit its lending under this exemption to $25 billion. Now, this means that somewhere within the Bank of America system, there is something, some entity, whether it is a bank customer or a part of the bank, it's impossible to tell, that is in desperate need of so much cash that the bank has to dip in to its reserves more than is allowed normally by the regulators. What is going on? Well, you sent me a few days ago a little email about a very strange and enormous option transaction that took place, and I don't know if these two things are connected, but they could be. folks, I won't go into the complexities of this option transaction. It was basically buying options on the S&P 500 index, where you, in this case, it's a so-called spread. If the thing goes up, then the options you bought saying it would go up would increase in value. If it goes down, the opposite would happen. But the whole spread was so-called out of the money. It was designed, apparently, to generate cash, because the part of it, the options that were sold, generate cash. In other words, you sell options you don't own, but you get the cash for selling them. You get the premium, and you can use that money. Now, on the buy side, offsetting that, you have to put up enough money to offset the difference, but it is, in this case, less. And the difference is about $25 billion. Are the two things connected? Jim, and I'm sorry, folks, to go on so long with this complicated thing, but it's hugely important to all of us. This is happening right in front of us. And, Jim, you're not a banker. I'm not a banker. But I'm telling you, it looks like something's falling apart around our ears here.
It certainly does. It sounds like the Bank of America is essentially hemorrhaging, right?
Well, not hemorrhaging. That's too strong a word, because it's a really, really big institution. But it's obviously having to ask for regulatory relief in order to raise cash. And that is, I just worry, I have to tell you. And I ask you this. What do you think the possibility is that the powers that be, the mysterious people who pull the levers, may actually want this to fall apart right now?
It could be. We're talking about the gnomes of Zurich, right?
Well, we're talking about the big, big rich who run this world. And
right.
If it did fall apart, and all of a sudden something happened like the United States currency plunged in value, it might turn out that they would make a gigantic, unbelievable killing in gold.
Whitley, what really gets me on this whole thing is that, especially on this short selling of stock, these put options, this is the very same thing that we saw happen in the days preceding the 9/11 attacks in 2001. And for those of you listening, you may recall that the mainstream media actually said in the days following 9/11, they said there was suspicious put options made on American Airlines, United Airlines, their insurance carriers, and some arms companies, which indicated foreknowledge. Someone knew that the 9/11 attacks were going to take place, and they said, we're going to get the FBI after this, and we're going to see if this doesn't track to Osama bin Laden. But you never heard another word about it, did you? And that's because they did not track to Osama bin Laden. They tracked back to Deutsche Bank and individuals connected to our Central Intelligence Agency.
Which has been amply proved. You know, Jim, I was actually an S&P 500 futures trader when this happened. I was trading the futures the very week it happened, or had been the week before, and I noticed that the short interest in the futures was rising, and the number of put options were being purchased was rising dramatically. And I did not understand that, because there was nothing in the market that would suggest it. I mean, you could guesstimate that maybe someone had decided that things were about to fall apart, but why? There just wasn't any explanation for it. And generally, I'm a very conservative and careful trader. When I come across a significant fact that I don't understand, I pull out. Wait for that fact to resolve. So on Friday, I closed out all my positions. On Monday, I looked again, and still there was no explanation. It was even bigger. And so I did not take any positions on Monday. I didn't do anything. On Tuesday morning, I found out.
Yeah.
But this was also reported, I believe, in a magazine called Futures Magazine, this unusual activity in the S&P 500 futures prior to 9/11. Somebody big knew, and it has been traced, indeed, to a man who was with Deutsche Bank, who was a former CIA employee. But obviously, they had an inside track, and it's horrifying. Now we have I believe, just yesterday. We're recording this on the 29th of August, folks, and you're going to be hearing it about a week from now, a week and a half from now. So bear with me. We have a story at this time up on unknowncountry.com about a let me just get to the story as we talk, and I'm sure I will do that shortly.
Hey, they may by in a week from now they may know what this is all about.
They may very well, but I and in any case, on August the 28th, there's a story headlined "The Question That Won't Go Away," and it is states Jim Marsh said it first, then theologian David Ray Griffin said it. The 911 attacks were either engineered or allowed to happen in order to push through the Patriot Act and facilitate the founding of the imperial government and its invasion of Iraq. Now, and then it goes on to say, Dr. Lynn Margulis, Dr. Margulis is an extraordinarily, she is probably the best credentialed person involved in this so far. In these people have a laundry list of important credentials. If it wasn't that what they were saying, anything any of these people said publicly would be believed implicitly.
And put in headlines.
Here is what she says, and I am quoting, "The 9/11 tragedy is the most successful and most perverse publicity stunt in the history of public relations." You understand, she was elected to the National Academy of Science. She's got the National Medal of Science. And she says, she goes on, "Whoever is responsible for bringing to grisly fruition this new false flag operation, which has been used to justify the wars in Afghanistan and as Iraq, as well as unprecedented assaults on research, education, and civil liberties, must be perversely proud of their efficient handiwork." And she says that the people who were claimed to have done it could not have done it. And she goes on at some length. And frankly, Jim, what is so terrifying is it worked for them the last time. Bush would never have been reelected if it hadn't been for 911. Never.
True.
And now we have last week Hillary Clinton saying, if there is another terrorist attack, it will help the Republicans. And I have to tell you, I think this country is the innocent people, us, have a sword of Damocles hanging over our heads right now, and we will be right back.
Yeah, and unfortunately...
No, Jim, yeah. We will be right back. We had originally planned to run this edition of Dreamland on September the 8th, but it is so timely, we're going to put it up instead over the Labor Day weekend. It will run for 2 weeks, that's right. This same Dreamland will be up next week, September the 8th, as well. And don't miss what is up in the subscriber section, because it's a continuation of this Dreamland, and it is powerful. Not yet a subscriber to Unknown Country? Well, listen to this. Well, this is Whitley Strieber. I'm talking to Jim Marsh, and obviously we are literally continuing Dreamland in the subscriber section. What I would like to do now is to ask you a critical, critical question. It's possible that we are staring right in the face of a false flag attack that is going to forever end our freedom in the United States. As a subscriber to unknowncountry.com, you would be able to listen to Jim's response to this question and other vital questions that I asked him during this powerful interview. And remember, there's a reason that you will not hear interviews like this on advertiser-supported radio programs. This is too controversial for them. They dare not air it. So what do you need to do? Well, it's clear. Support us with your subscription. And you can always add a donation right on our homepage at any time. If you only want to subscribe for a little while, send us a note after subscribing and we'll turn off auto-renew. But please do Click on that subscribe tab today. This is real. We need you. We cannot do it without you. One of Dreamland's most popular guests, Philip Gardner, recently interviewed legendary author Tim Wallace Murphy for his new DVD, The Real Bloodline, and got some very surprising revelations. Listen to this unexpected statement.
The Holy Blood and Holy Grail fantasy, which Major Lee and Lincoln bought wholesale, that was written purely to extol the ego Pierre Plantin, yeah. Who was an egomaniac writ large.
So we have to ask ourselves, why does the bloodline even matter? Well, it does, and Tim Wallace Murphy tells us some secrets in this amazing DVD that you literally will not hear elsewhere. They're not popular. They may not be what the average person wants to hear. They just happen to be a little close to the truth. Philip Gardner's brilliant new DVD, The Real Bloodline. Get it from the unknowncountry.com store. Click on the store tab, then go to the DVD section. We're back. I'm talking to Jim Mars. Sci Spies is out. His book on remote viewing, long suppressed. Now you can finally read Sci Spies. Why was it suppressed? Well, find out and keep up with Jim Mars's great work at jimmars.com. Plus, whenever he is a guest host on Dreamland, do not miss it. You will not hear the like anywhere else. Dreamland, the only show in the world with all expert hosts. Ann Streber on alien abductions, me on UFOs, abductions, and all of my many other areas of interest. Jim Mars, a specialist in conspiracy, including the suppression of alien information and the Kennedy assassination. William Henry, a specialist on the lost secrets of the past. Dreamland, like no other show in the world. Jim, before we left the air, we were talking about the incredible story in on unknowncountry.com about Lynn Margulis and the 911 conspiracy being a false flag operation, which just, I mean, I dropped my teeth at the thought of that. Let's hear your response.
Well, absolutely. And what Lynn Margulis is saying, basically, is that this was a false flag operation. In other words, it was conducted within the U.S. government. And as you said, this is a sword of Damocles that we can hold over their heads, but then that's pretty scary because then that means that it's almost a necessity for them to engineer another powerful event to get people's minds off of it, to get them distracted, and to get them herded back into this national security fear mode.
Now, haven't they, though, set up essentially a series of presidential proclamations to the effect that, and maybe even laws, that the president can essentially become dictator?
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about that, will you?
Well, there's been a series of presidential directives, more so than almost any other president, under the... under one directive, Bush asserts that in the event of a national emergency, which is anything he cares to sign his name to, natural or unnatural, that he will assume control over the executive, judicial, and legislative branches of the government. In other words, he won't be just in charge of the executive. He'll be in charge of everything. That's pretty spooky. And then in a directive he signed back in July, it states that if you are not supportive of the war in Iraq, then they can come and seize you, take your property, and then also anyone who supports you. But which, if you really get down to it, could mean that if you speak out against the war in Iraq, then they can come and take your property, your home, whatever. And if you're out on the street and you come to my house and say, "Can you put me up?" and as a kind, considerate person, I go, "Well, sure, Willie, come on in, you can spend the night for a few nights," then they can come and take my property. Now, of course, this has not been utilized as far as we know, and it's certainly, if it has, it's not been widespread, so most people aren't even aware, but the mechanism is firmly in place to to do exactly that, to essentially assume total control. And if you'll recall, General Tommy Franks, 2-3 years ago, said, if there's another major terrorist strike, most likely we'll go into martial law.
And I might add, folks, just so you know, the model for the regulations that he just described was the Third Reich. These regulations were first promulgated among the Nuremberg laws right after Adolf Hitler took power, and they were designed to create a trail for anybody that the state wanted, anywhere they went, that whoever they went to was equally guilty. Their guilt spread like an infection, and so that they could roll up not only the people who were openly opposed to the state, but also everyone they thought might help them and give them mercy. This evil, incredibly pernicious law is on our books right now. And I have to tell you, I don't think there's any way for this presidency to survive, or for the Republican Party even to survive as a party right now, unless something radical is done. At the Iowa straw polls, last time they held those polls, 40,000 people showed up. This year, 14,000 people showed up. This was not ignored. This was noticed. Because if Iowa is being abandoned, and I'm not a political partisan, I'm totally middle of the road. I've got plenty of Republican friends, plenty of Democratic friends. I believe in some of the ideals of each party. But I think we're in real trouble, because I don't see any way for this administration and its ideals to survive without a false flag attack or some kind of an attack.
That's correct. And on top of that, they're back to the Iowa polls. The leader in the Republican straw polls was Texas Representative Ron Paul, the only candidate in the race so far who actually is even addressing some of these issues. And yet Ron Paul, if you'll notice, is just barely a blip on the radar screen of the corporate mass media. It's like he doesn't exist, and if they do mention him, it's in a dismissive manner. And yet he is pretty much scored head and shoulders above all the other leading contenders, which shows that there are thinking people out there, but their views are not being taken into consideration.
But not by the gigantic corporate juggernaut. And folks, support of big corporations is nothing to do with conservatism. I'm sorry. Conservatism is about preserving individual freedom, beginning, middle, and end. That's the core of it. Not about deregulating big corporations so that they can walk over our backs at all. So the people who are doing that are going into the Congress and working for the big companies. As I view most senators and representatives as being simply executives of big corporations who happen to be being paid by us. This is not conservatism.
No,
not at all. And okay,
I think everybody realizes that in recent years, the corporate lobbyist special interests have gained a dominant role in Congress. They're all on the payroll one way or another. One of the main reasons for this, of course, is the fact that today, to get elected, a candidate has to be on television. And television is very expensive. And television demands payment up front. You can't run a bill with a television station. And as a result, whoever has the largest amount of money gets on television and generally gets elected. So they have to sell out to the large corporations to get the money required to get into office, which puts them in a position of being, as you said, a taxpayer-supported official of the corporation. Now, Whitley, have you considered this? in Nazi Germany and in fascist Italy, you saw the merging of state and corporate power. But in that instance, the state gained control over the corporations, and it's that very combination of state and corporate power that is the dictionary definition of fascism. Now, what's happened in modern America is that the corporations have gained control over the state, but the end result is the same.
Exactly. The end result is the same. You have an authoritarian corporate states, and you have a direct attack on individual freedom cloaked in an ideology that is simply false. It is a lie. It is not an ideology. It's a set of justifications, and there's a lot of difference between those two things. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And what do we have to help us know the truth? We have the big media, which are some candidates out there with truth to tell, like Ron Paul, I guess, and they get no coverage precisely for that reason. And it is absolutely terrifying. Now, Jim, we talked a few minutes ago about this business of a possible second terrorist attack. Now, I'm going to put my cards right on the table here. I am not a believer in the false flag idea. Now, it's strictly emotional. This is my emotion speaking. I have trouble believing that anyone could be evil enough, that George W. Bush could be evil enough to actually do a thing like that.
Well,
we're coming up on a break, and you can respond to that in just a few minutes. What I personally do feel that I know for certain is they let it happen. And they let it happen because it can be proved that at least they let it happen. The National Security Council was warned by the FAA 11 times prior to 9/11 that there was a danger that terrorists would fly airplanes into the World Trade Center. Those warnings were not communicated in any way to the airline industry. Instead, the fact that they existed and the fact that they had not been communicated to the airline industry was held classified until after the last presidential election. To me, ipso facto proof, they knew it was coming. They sat on their hands. We'll be right back. We had originally planned to run this edition of Dreamland on September the 8th, but it is so timely, we're going to put it up instead over the Labor Day weekend. It will run for 2 weeks. That's right. This same Dreamland will be up next week, September the 8th, as well. And don't miss what is up in the subscriber section, because it's a continuation of this Dreamland, and it is powerful. 2012, The War for Souls, in bookstores, September the 26th. Publishers Weekly calls it wildly entertaining, and I hope that's true. Find out by listening to the readings appearing on our stream at Position 5 on the UnknownCountry.com homepage, also downloadable for subscribers. Plus, I'll be at East West Books in New York on Thursday, September the 20th at 6:30 p.m., at Dark Delicacies in Burbank on September the 23rd at 2 p.m., at the Tattered Cover in Denver on September the 28th at 7:30 p.m. Come to these readings and signings to get your book autographed. In his new DVD set, William Henry has got some incredible things to say about just how to empower ourselves as never before in our journey toward transformation. Listen to this.
As Jesus taught also, he said, "I am the door." And we're to interpret that literally here in the case of these images. Through the process of mirror neurons, as they're called today, we can engage these images on an energetic level and allow them to begin to program our energetic being so that we, in fact, become doorways ourselves.
This is powerful and important stuff. Do not miss this new 2-DVD set from William Henry, The Light Body Effect, available now in the UnknownCountry.com store. and subscribers, obviously there is a connection between the light body effect and the new set of meditations that I'm doing in the subscribers section. So do, if you can, use your coupon for the light body effect in order to get this DVD and help you deepen your experience of the meditations. This is Whitley Strieber. It's Dreamland. We're talking to Jim Mars. His great website, jimmars.com. It is really neat, filled with information of a kind you obviously are not going to get anywhere else. Jim Mars, one of the world's leading experts on what goes on behind the doors that are behind the doors. Crossfire, alien agendas, and now Psy Spies, his long-suppressed book, out for you to buy in the bookstore, or even better, from unknowncountry.com's great Amazon store. Don't miss it. If you want this book, get it from us, because you help this keep going by getting things from us, by subscribing to unknowncountry.com. Will you hear this anywhere else, any of this? You will in different bits and pieces in different places, but this is where we go really, really deep. Jim, before we left the air, you were just about to talk a little bit more about this false flag operation. Why don't we go on from there?
Okay, well, I realize that it's difficult for most people, and obviously you yourself, as you expressed before the break, to really believe that our leadership would participate in an event that would cost thousands of American lives. But let's go back and look at the historical record. What is now beyond dispute, and it was disputed all through my lifetime, but it's now beyond dispute, is that President Franklin Roosevelt, his chief of staff, George Marshall, a handful of others in Washington, knew that Japan was going to attack Pearl Harbor on December the 7th. And not only did they not do anything, but there were steps taken to facilitate that attack. For example, the new Japanese broken code was sent to every base in the Pacific except Pearl Harbor. The ships in Pearl Harbor were massed together. The airplanes on the airfields were massed in the center of the fields, supposedly to prevent sabotage, but what it did was create a wonderful target for the Japanese plane. So what we now know is that Pearl Harbor was allowed to happen to further their political agenda, which was to get a enraged and unified U.S. public into World War II, the very thing that Roosevelt had pledged not to do when he won his unprecedented fourth term in office. So, yes, they will do this. Now, as to 9/11, the evidence, even before the end of 2001, as I was accumulating it and putting it into book form, was that, as you said, it's beyond dispute that there were people high within the federal government of the United States who knew that this 9/11 attack was about to occur. Now, not only did they not do anything, but there are documented instances in the FBI and the CIA where steps were taken to block any meaningful investigation into the activities of Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden. So they actually facilitated it. And then when you look at the actual attacks of 9/11, where were the interceptors? Why were war game exercises being conducted that very morning that included a scenario of hijacked planes crashing into the World Trade Center so that when it actually happened, our normal defenses were in confusion? They didn't know what was real or what was not. Richard Clark, the head of the Counterterrorism Task Force, said when he first contacted General Myers of NORAD and said, "Have you got any interceptors in the air?" The first thing Myers said was, "Well, you know, we're in the middle of war games." And Colonel Marr with NORAD said, "Is this the real world or is this the war games? Who authorized those war games and why was this kept from the public for more than a year and has only dribbled out ever since?" And then, of course, we've already talked about the short selling of stock, which showed somebody tried to capitalize beforehand on the attack. So it's clear that they knew this was going to happen, and they allowed it to happen. But, Whitley, that's the absolute best light you can put on it. When you really go back and understand that Al-Qaeda is a creation of the Central Intelligence Agency, that used these Arab mercenaries to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan during the 80s, and that the Al-Qaeda was used to train the Kosovo Liberation Army, our faction, in the Kosovo conflict, and the fact that Osama bin Laden himself was brought to the United States and given money and arms and training and everything else, then you have to ask yourself, how do we know they're not still working for the CIA? And then you look and realize the extent of the involvement of Saudi Arabia in the 9/11 attack. 15 of the 19 identified hijackers were Saudis. None were Iranians. None were Iraqis. And we do now know, or people should know, that the closest social and business friends to the Saudi royals and to the bin Laden family in particular was the Bush family, who was flown over to Saudi Arabia in the summer of 2000 as the guest of the Saudi royals and particularly the bin Laden family. They were in business with the bin Ladens through the Carlyle Group until that began to be public, and then the bin Ladens withdrew. It's just too much. And yet that information, as you well know, was sequestered, classified, kept from the American people.
Yes, it was. It was, and as I said, the particular part of it I referred to was, now let's fast forward to the present, if I may, Jim. And you, before we came on the air, you mentioned something I believe that was called Operation Noble Resolve. Is that correct?
Just a minute.
Troops going to Washington?
Operation Noble Eagle.
Noble Eagle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, another war game exercise to where they are taking military units and moving them into the Washington, D.C. area in early September. Keep in mind that there has been plans for anti-war demonstrations and demonstrations against the NAFTA, and against the all these various economic structures that are trying to bring us into a North American Union, in their own words, through evolution by stealth. Okay, that was in one of their documents. In other words, they admit that they're sneaking this in on us. So it could be that these troops are being brought to Washington in preparation for trying to corral and control the crowds there, but of course it also could mean something more deep.
And what might that be?
Well, it could be that somewhere somebody is preparing for another terrorist strike, exactly as we've been talking about.
Let me ask you this. Say there is another terrorist strike. You know as well as I do it's going to be really terrible. Either it's going to be a dirty bomb or a nuke, or maybe more than one nuke.
Or biochemical,
but probably dirty bomb or nuke, simply because biochemical is just so hard to execute. But who knows what it's going to be? That's neither here nor there for us today. What we need to talk about today is, do you feel that Hillary Clinton is right? Will another terrorist attack help the president and help the Republicans or not? Because, Jim, I think that it will cause something close to a revolution. I think people will want to drag Bush out of the White House by his heels.
Well, you know, his father said that essentially back in 1992 in an interview with Sarah McClendon, the old White House correspondent, and she quoted him in a July 1992 newsletter, George Herbert Walker Bush, as saying, "Sarah, if the American people ever found out what we've done to them, they'll chase us down the street and lynch us." And that's probably true. So, again, they are going to have to move and do something pretty heavy-handed, because they're not going to allow that to happen.
But the only thing they could do, really, is, I mean, what? Say it happens. Say L.A. or Chicago, New York, or even Washington, which is what I fear the most, is destroyed. And, of course, under those circumstances, you can be assured that the president and vice president would not happen to be in Washington on that day.
Right.
And now they declare martial law. They turn it into a dictatorship. The chaos is such that the election can't be held. And Bush agrees happily to stay on indefinitely until things are settled out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a situation where I just can't believe that the American public would tolerate it.
No.
I don't think the other political leaders would tolerate it. I don't think that anyone, even under those circumstances, is powerful enough to effect a dictatorship here. But what's scary is I do think they might be willing to try.
Well, you may not be aware of this. I cover this in a new upcoming book, but back in the 80s, when Bush was vice president, and keep in mind that Reagan was shot and was out of action for several months. And during that time, it was George Herbert Walker Bush who was running the country. And in fact, it's now come to light that it was George Herbert Walker Bush who authorized what became known as the Iran-Contra scandal. Through that, they kept saying, well, we had the authority of the president. They didn't bother to say which president it was. This was President Bush, okay? And during that time, Cheney and Bush and several other top-ranking Republicans would disappear for days on end. And what it comes out is they were meeting secretly to plan what they call continuity of government. Now, we saw this come public just briefly right after 9/11, when even the mainstream media was talking about the shadow government, okay? And these are people who are actually running the show. Now, Whitley, here's what's really fascinating about these meetings and this plan that was being set up in the 80s for continuity of government. One of the thorniest issues they had to deal with was, what are we going to do about Congress? And what they finally decided was, Congress is superfluous. We just won't include them in this. So they already have a structure set up, ready to take over, that excludes Congress, our elected representatives. It's really getting pretty dangerous.
Well, yeah, it's getting really scary. And, Jim, we have to take another break. So we're going to be right back with Jim Marrs. We had originally planned to run this edition of Dreamland on September the 8th, but it is so timely, we're going to put it up instead over the Labor Day weekend. It will run for 2 weeks, that's right. This same Dreamland will be up next week, September the 8th, as well. And don't miss what is up in the subscriber section, because it's a continuation of this Dreamland, and it is powerful. Not yet a subscriber to Unknown Country? Well, listen to this. Well, this is Whitley Strieber. I'm talking to Jim Marrs, and obviously we are literally continuing Dreamland in the subscriber section. What I would like to do now is to ask you a critical, critical question. It's possible that we are staring right in the face of a false flag attack that is going to forever end our freedom in the United States. As a subscriber to unknowncountry.com, you would be able to listen to Jim's response to this question and other vital questions that I asked him during this powerful interview. And remember, there's a reason that you will not hear interviews like this on advertiser-supported radio programs. This is too controversial for them. They dare not air it. So what do you need to do? Well, it's clear. Support us with your subscription. And you can always add a donation right on our homepage at any time. If you only want to subscribe for a little while, send us a note after subscribing and we'll turn off auto-renew. But please do. Click on that subscribe tab today. This is real. We need you. We cannot do it without you. Coming up later in the show, Linda Moulton Howe with a frightening story about cat and dog mutilations back again after all of these years. Don't miss it. This is Whitley Strieber. I'm talking to Jim Marrs. Jim Marrs' website, jimmarrs.com, his terrific new book, Psi Spies. We're going to be getting into that in just a moment. Jim Mars is a Dreamland guest host and really, really exciting. I'm always all ears when I hear that Jim Mars is hosting one of our shows because Jim, like all Dreamland hosts, is an expert in his field. He isn't simply someone who basically is handed a book and doesn't know what the heck is in it, never reads it, and only asks sort of surfacey questions. We get down in the cracks here because we do know what we're talking about. Now, Jim, your book, Psi Spies, there's quite a story behind this lovely little book that I have in my hands here, The True Story of America's Psychic Warfare Program. Jim, now surely this would have been published by a major publisher and some years ago when it was written. What's going on here?
Well, this is, again, just suppression and censorship of information. I guess to make a long, sad story short, right after the success of my book, Crossfire, I began to look around and ask people, what do you think's the next big, deep, dark, secret government cover-up? And almost unanimously, people said, we'd like to know the truth about the UFO issue. And I thought, you know, I would too. So I began to reestablish contacts and establish new contacts within the UFO research community, and I happened to stumble across a fellow in the Midwest who sent me a transcript from the TREAT 4 conference in Atlanta in 1992, in which a Army major got up and quite matter-of-factly said, well, UFOs are this, and they come from here, and they're going to there, and they're hauling this. And I'm going, wow, how does he know all this stuff? And so I made contact and then found out that this was one of the Psi Spies, a member of the Grill Flame Stargate unit that was being used operationally and secretly within the U.S. Army's Intelligence and Security Command. And this was based on scientific study stretching back into the early 70s that it was initiated by the CIA. And basically they found out that this psychic ability can and does work. So that put me onto the story of the Psi Spies, and I thought one of two things. Either this is not true, in which case it's a big story because it's a waste of the taxpayers' money, or it is true, and this is really a big story because this could signal an evolutionary leap in mankind. And sure enough, I found out that it was true. I not only interviewed the Psi Spies, but members of the oversight committees, people who had been had fringe contact with them, other people within the military who said, yes, we were totally aware of all this. And the bottom line is it works. And what's amazing is that, number one, they found out through extensive laboratory testing that this ability to remote view is inherent in every single person that they tested. Now, obviously, some people probably were more naturally gifted than others, but all of us have this ability. I'm sure most of us have had the experience of suddenly thinking, oh, my mother's going to call. And then a few minutes later, the phone rings, and it's your mother. We all have this ability. And the other amazing thing is that this ability is not limited by time or space. You can go back and look at things in the past. You can even go forward and look at things in the future. You can go out and look at things out in space and on other planets. And they proved this because in the early 70s, they had some remote viewing done of Jupiter and some of its moons, and they got all this detailed information back. And at that point, it was like, well, that's interesting, but, you know, how did we know this? And then in the late 70s, when the Voyager deep space probes went out there and started sending data back to the Earth, they found out that everything these remote viewers had said was true. So this is an amazing thing. And, of course, the people within the government who know that knowledge is power, they don't want the average Joe to know that he can find out the truth about things for himself. They want him totally caught in the matrix, electromagnetic matrix, created by their corporate mass media. And so as a result, when I wrote this book, I didn't just quote one or two people and take their word for it. I did the research. I looked at the scientific papers, and I downplayed the UFO angle, although each and every single military remote viewer, whether they'll talk about it or not, came into personal direct knowledge of the UFOs. They're just there, and they're there. And as a result, apparently my book was a little too credible, because just as it was going to the printers in the summer of 1995, it was just suddenly stopped for no particular reason. The publisher dumped their legal people, went around them, went to an outside legal firm, some lawyer who I was ordered not to contact or even talk to, and he decided they had to cancel the book. And then within a week or two, the military had ordered a review of remote viewing. Another week or two went by. They broke the story in the supermarket tabloid saying CIA's used psychics to spy on the Russians, which put the kiss of death to this story, because no major establishment media is going to be quoting a supermarket tabloid. And then a few weeks later, the report came back from Jessica Utz and Ray Hyman, stating that while statistically they could prove that something was happening there, they didn't know how, so therefore it wasn't happening, and therefore there wasn't much to this remote viewing. And the CIA says yes, and we're going to drop this program, never truthfully telling that they dropped the program a long time ago, and it was the U.S. Army that was using this operationally. And then right after that, the CIA sent out a press release, unprecedented. When does the CIA ever break open, you know, one of their secret programs, you know, unless they're forced to? And they said, yes, we studied this, but we didn't think we're getting much out of it, and we think we're just going to put a stop to this. New York Times, Washington Post carried a few front page stories talking about a trio of psychics, okay, never mentioning that this was a program that had gone on through four separate administrations,
right,
to the tune of $25 million or more over a period of years. And the whole story just kind of died. And as far as I know, I kept looking in the Texas media to see if anybody was picking up on this. There was never a word. And to this very day, Whitley, I think that except for the listeners of Dreamland and a few people with their heads out of the sand, the vast majority of the American public really doesn't even know about remote viewing or even that it exists.
Well, you know, Jim, I have a long, long history with this. I know the founders of the SRI program quite well and have never had Hal Puthoff on Dreamland, but I've had others. Russell Targ's been on, and Joe McMonagle has been on.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people involved in it have been on. I also knew other people within the government who were heavily involved in the program. And ironically, the program came back into my life in 1999 when I met the editor who had canceled your book, but then a few years later in 1997 published Jim Schnabel's book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told by someone within the government, a gentleman who was then working for the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, that the Jim Schnabel book had been vetted by and edited by the Central Intelligence Agency. Is that true?
It most probably is, and I think that's the reason that my book was censored and suppressed, because my book was not vetted by the CIA.
Now, I asked this editor the same question. Was it vetted by the CIA? And his answer was interesting. He said, "I'm very ashamed of the whole affair. I wish I hadn't published it."
Wow.
And he never said it was or wasn't vetted by the CIA, because I guess he probably couldn't.
Right.
But I was left to draw my own conclusions. I don't know quite what he meant. He was an odd duck anyway.
Well, let me, just to support that in a kind of a way, you know, one of the major books that is out trying to support the lone assassin theory of the Kennedy assassination is a book...
Vincent Bugliosi.
By Gerald Posner.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And at one point, I debated Posner in Dallas, and we were face-to-face. And he told me to my face that his book, Case Closed, was not even his idea, that he had been approached by Random House, which long has been rumored to be a front, CIA front, and that he was given a big wad of money to write this book, and was told that that he would have the complete cooperation of the CIA. another instance of where they have put out their own spin through major mass media corporations.
Well, you know, I'm having a very interesting problem with Random House right now. Just as we speak, they are giving me some trouble with an old contract, and we've had a lot of difficulty recently because there is something, some kind of a program like Black Orifice has been placed on our computers here in our office, and someone is accessing our computers late at night from remotely. And we are in control of this now, but we've had a lot of material taken. I even had a situation where a script that I had not yet even shown to the movie people, a guy walked up while I was, signing books with a copy of this script and wanted me to sign a copy of the script for him, and it could only have been taken off of my computer by a hacker now.
Back well, that's kind of a not-so-subtle
no.
word that, hey, we're on to everything you're doing.
Back to Random House.
Well, you know Random
well, no,
House.
Well, let me just finish. Just back to Random House. I need a copy of a contract with Random House that from 1999. Every contract I have ever signed is in a file. I opened the file. The only contract, book contract, not in the file now, is that contract. And in addition, we have proof that someone has physically entered this apartment twice in recent months and made physical alterations to our computer system. Did this person working within the CIA or wherever also pull this contract so that Random House could then attack me in this particular way? It's all spurious. It's all going to go away. But it is harassment.
Of course.
And it's familiar to me. It has happened to me before. I've had other situations in the past where people were entering my apartments or my houses, taking specific files, and I was then having utterly unfounded claims made against me by the companies that I needed those files to defend myself from.
Well, they obviously are leaning on you. Now, let's back off and look at the broader picture. Random House is owned by Bertelsmann of Germany, okay? Which, by the way, owns all the major book clubs and also owns the UK's Channel 5. They own all kinds of, in fact, they own all but about two of the major U.S. publishers, and those two, of course, there's HarperCollins and its wholly owned subsidiary, Robert Morrow, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch. But everything else is owned by Bertelsmann. Bertelsmann, who said, oh, we had to shut down because we were anti-Nazi during the war, has now had to back off and apologize for misstating their history because it turns out that they were the largest publisher to the German army, and they published Nazi war propaganda throughout the war. It's a wholly owned company owned by two families over in Germany, and so it's amazing, but here these German families connected to the Nazis are now in control of all but two of our major publishers.
Jim, we have come to the end of Dreamland, our time together, but folks, I urge you to subscribe and support this operation because there's no other place like it in the world. There is no place like Unknown Country. There is no show like Dreamland. Jim and I are going to continue this conversation right now in the subscriber section. And up next up on Dreamland, Linda Moulton Howe. 2012, The War for Souls in bookstores, September the 26th. Publishers Weekly calls it wildly entertaining, and I hope that's true. Find out by listening to the readings appearing on our stream at Position 5 on the UnknownCountry.com homepage, also downloadable for subscribers. Plus, I'll be at East West Books in New York on Thursday, September the 20th at 6:30 p.m., at Dark Delicacies in Burbank on September the 23rd at 2 p.m., at the Tattered Cover in Denver on September the 28th at 7:30 p.m. Come to these readings and signings to get your book autographed. Today, Linda Moulton Howe has for us a remarkable and important story, and a story that she's had a lot of trouble pinning down because, for some reason, the authorities do not want to talk about this, and they do not want you to know about it. And what is it? Well, we've talked about it for years, so that part is no surprise. It seems that cat and pet mutilations are taking place again. Why don't they want us to talk about it? Well, we'll find out in just a few moments when we hear from our EarthFiles.com ace correspondent, Emmy Award-winning Linda Moulton Howe, and here she is from Albuquerque. Hello, Linda.
Thanks, Whitley. I have been reporting about half-cat mutilations since the beginning of the 1980s. That's what they're called, half-cats. I have interviewed grieving cat owners and societies for the prevention of cruelty to animals in London, all over Canada, and from the west to the east and to the Gulf Coast of the United States now for nearly 20 years. Between August 19th and 24th, 2007, in Barrie, Ontario, Canada, which is north of Toronto on the west side of Lake Simcoe, the back half of one cat was found August 19th, the front half of another 2 days later on August 21st, and 2 days after that, on August 23rd, another front half of a cat was found. It's the lack of blood and no fur at these scenes generally that suggest to authorities that the cats are taken, cut in half in another location, and the half, whichever one, front or back, is returned for reasons unknown to the neighborhood lawns where the half cats are then discovered. The most recent top half of a cat that was found on August 23rd was near a very popular and crowded walking trail on the north side of Barrie, which is the opposite side of town from the first two in the south. And the north and the south of Barrie, which is a small town, are about 5 miles apart. The next day, on August 24th, Rachel Banks, who is the animal cruelty investigator for the Barrie SPCA, went to the scene. This is her third half-cat, and the first three she has ever seen in her life and in her 5 years of working animal cruelty in Barrie, Ontario.
It's been going on a week and a half now. We found the remains, unfortunately, of three cats, ordinary domestic short-haired cats, that have been what looks to be mutilated and dismembered. We're not believing at this point in time that these mutilations were caused by other animals. It looks like there's more human involvement.
Could you please describe each of the three cats as they were found?
I can give you what I'm allowed to, certainly. Each of the cats were found cut in half. The first one, we only were able to locate the bottom half. The second one, we were able to locate the top half, as well as the third one, the top half as well. The third one also had its remaining limbs cut off and placed beside it.
So if I understand correctly, on this third cat, it is the front half of the cat that is there, and lying next to it were there two legs separated or four legs that had been cut off and laid next to the front half?
There were only two legs that were placed next to the body. The other two legs were not found.
And were those two legs next to the front half the two front legs?
They were. We haven't been able to locate the owners of the cat. Based on the remains that we did find, all were healthy adults. One was wearing a collar, unfortunately had no tag, but they were all well-groomed, well-cared-for cats. So we are assuming that these are owned cats based on the fact that they're so well-cared-for. And we have had some inquiries from people as well as some photographs dropped off to try to ID these animals, but nothing concrete as of yet, unfortunately.
Was each cat found in a yard, like a front yard or a backyard of a house?
The first cat was actually found in the backyard of a fairly new, busy residential area here in town. The second cat was found a few kilometers away at the local high school in their football field. And the third cat was found on the other side of town on a popular dog walking trail.
The first two cats were on which side of Barrie?
South end of Barrie.
South end. And the third cat was found at what direction?
In the north end.
Totally the opposite side.
Yeah.
Did you go to each site?
I did.
Did you see signs of fur, blood, or struggle?
The first two, absolutely not. There was absolutely nothing. The third one that we found was a little more odd. The woman that had reported it, she had found it when she thought it was newly deceased. So she did note blood. By the time we got there again the next day, there was no blood. However, there was fur. So it did look like some sort of a struggle had occurred, or perhaps if it was a criminal act, that it occurred at that spot.
In the first two animals, which is so typical of all of them over the last 30-some years of reports of half-cats, what always impresses law enforcement and people who own the cats is that it's bloodless, clean, no signs of struggle. Would that suggest to you that the cats are picked up and taken someplace and then returned?
It looks as if the first two were. We can't, again, say with definitive certainty right now, but it looks as if they were placed in the scenes and the locations that we found them.
When you talk with police about that, what is their comment about the process of taking the animals from their neighborhood to some place, cutting them in half, and returning only the front or the back half bloodless?
We've never really dealt with this matter before, so everything's very new to people, and everyone's quite horrified by this if these acts are being committed by a human or a resident of our community. So certainly they're very concerned as well. There's a definitive link between cruelty towards animals and violence toward animals continuing on and eventually leading to violence and cruelty towards people. So certainly the police are very concerned with this.
Do you or any of the authorities investigating speculate how this process of getting the cats, taking them someplace else, cutting them in half, and returning them is accomplished?
Right now, everything is pending the necropsy report, so we're not sure how these acts were done, what kind of weapon these were committed with. I have to reiterate that it does look like the two first cats that were found were certainly killed in another location and then taken and dumped at the locations that were found. All three are very popular areas. They were placed in such a way that would lead us to believe somebody wanted them to be found. We're not sure at this point in time how they're doing this, but we're hoping the necropsy reports and the autopsy reports will give us a better idea once they study the bones and the cuts in the bones, things like that, what these acts were committed with, whether they were pre-mortem or post-mortem, will give us a better idea of what we're looking for anyway.
Who is doing the necropsies?
We're sending them down to the University of Guelph, which is our leading animal laboratory here in Canada.
And do you know when they expect that the results of their necropsies will be available?
I'm hoping within the coming days. That depends how many emergency cases they get down there. We're estimating another couple days.
Have you asked them to check the excisions for evidence of high heat?
We've asked for any information they can give us on the incisions, a blade that's involved, what kind of a blade it is, everything.
In work that I did with a hematologist, pathologist in Denver in the early 90s involving half cats found in Vancouver, BC, that office shipped one of the front half cats to the hematologist pathologist, Dr. John Altshuler in Denver. And in his examination, he confirmed that the entire excision of the cat had been done with high heat, hot enough to cook the hemoglobin and the collagen.
Wow, that's I'll certainly put a call into the university then and let them know that specifically they should look for that as well. This is certainly an odd case for us here in Barrie, and we're not generally used to dealing with situations like that. Usually we deal with animals that are alive and that we're able to help. So it's quite frustrating in this case for us now dealing with not only a deceased animal but one that's also been mutilated. So we're certainly hoping that we can find an answer to what's going on. It's certainly odd.
And the Barrie OSPCA line for anyone who might have any information about these half-cat mutilations is area code 705-728-7311. And you can go to my news website at earthfiles.com. And in this extensive report that I have there that includes many images, maps, and it gives the websites and the phone numbers for all of the offices that are currently involved now trying to deal with half cats, and in Missouri that I'll be talking about, two mutilated dogs. Now we're going to go across Lake Simcoe. Imagine that you're leaving Barrie and you're going directly east, right across the lake, to Beaverton, Ontario. And 9 months ago, on November 21st, 2006, a 9-year-old family cat named Tigger, he had been raised from kittenhood by its owner, Kim Bissaw, was also found, and this was the quote, cut clean in half, unquote. In that case, the back half of the cat had been left on a neighbor's lawn. Both the regional Durham Police and Humane Society investigated and confirmed that a number of pets have been reported missing from the Beaverton region. And in the weeks following that gruesome death of Tigger, there was an uptick in the disappearances that were reported. The Durham Humane Society number is at earthfiles.com, as well as the Durham Regional Police Service. And rather than give those numbers in dreamland, please go to earthfiles, because there is a lot to absorb both from their websites and from their phone numbers. But if anybody has any information, please get in touch with Humane Society and the police service. Now, Debbie Houghton at the Durham Humane Society and the Ontario Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals has investigated half-cats before. And this goes all the way back to 1999 to 2000. And that's when the Toronto Police and the OSPCA investigated at least 10 cases of half-cats. But no perpetrator was ever found. And in these 30-some years of half-cat reports around the world, no one has ever been arrested, arraigned, and convicted on any charges. And yet the half-cat phenomenon continues. During the first week of November 1999, they had a $60,000 reward that was offered by the Ontario Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals for information about those 10 mutilated cats. And during that exact same time period in 1999, beyond Ontario, Canada, half cats were being reported in London, England, San Jose, California, Fort Worth, Texas. And over the past couple of decades, odd cat mutilations have been investigated repeatedly in Plano, Texas, Tustin, California, Falls Church, Virginia. And such a long list now that you have to go to earthfiles.com to see all of the places that these half-cat cases have been reported. Now, as of August 30th, 2007, as we are going into the Labor Day weekend of 2007, unbeknownst, this is amazing, unbeknownst to the SPCA in Barrie, which is in Ontario, going west and south into St. Albert and Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and St. Albert is a northern suburb of Edmonton, since July 2007, in just the last couple of months, they have now a running total of 21 cat mutilations officially reported over the past several months, including 5 last summer. And recently, the Humane Society there joined up with the Edmonton Police and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to have a joint task force about this cat mutilation phenomenon that keeps reoccurring in various parts of Canada. Officials there are very, very reluctant to release any details about the death, and it is presumed, because they have been so tight-lipped, that they are dealing with exactly the same half-cat syndrome that Barrie is, that Beaverton is, and others that have been in Canada. But right now, they are waiting for a veterinarian pathologist to examine the cats that they've turned over to him before they make any public statement. One of the authorities said, quote, "We're always asking for the public's help. And we would like them to report every and any instance that they think is a suspicious cat death or other suspicious animal death and bring it to our attention as well as to the Humane Society's attention." This is a quote from the Edmonton Police Sergeant Dwayne Hunter, who has joined up with the Humane Society and law enforcement for this task force. And they now have a whole series of phone numbers and contacts, which I have at earthfiles.com, because now they are involving so many people in authorities about a phenomenon that continues to occur, and they never, ever find the perpetrator. They are so determined now that I think this is part of what is fueling their desire to not say anything to the media. They are afraid of copycat. They are afraid of releasing details of information before they have an arrest. The problem is, as I have said to some of these authorities, if half-cats have been found and reported around the world for 30 years and counting, and there's never been an arrest, arraignment, and conviction, it will be a really true first if Edmonton and St. Albert can crack the case of their 21 half-cats now. And what neither of those departments, not in Barrie and Beaverton, nor in St. Albert or Edmonton, those are Alberta province and Ontario province in Canada, none of those people knew or were aware that down in Destin, Florida, not only are there ongoing half-cat mutilations now, but back in April to May of 2006, a year ago, there was a round of bloodless half-cats that were reported in one particular neighborhood. And since then, the Florida Okaloosa County Sheriff's deputies and animal control officers still have many cases on their books that are unsolved about these half-cats in Destin and Fort Walton Beach. And they know that in Navarre, they've also had mutilations in the past. So there's a line, and I've got a map at Earthfile so you can see these purple dots that show where these repeated half-cats keep showing up in this Gulf Coast area of Florida. Now, the Northwest Florida Daily News recently in June 28, 2007, reported that there was two recent cat deaths that were confirmed, both of them involved half cats, and that there is one area in Destin called Kell Air Court. That's where they have had some of these cats that have been found cut in half, and in some other cases, these odd characterizations in which the cats have been skinned in odd ways, and some cut in half, just like Canada. Now, the sheriff has said, we have a few of these, and they are so close in proximity that it makes me wonder that who could be doing this, because we've already ruled out these are not animal deaths. This is not predation. And this is the first time that I personally have heard law enforcement and authorities, both in Canada off the record and in Florida now on the record, saying very strongly they are not dealing with predators. This is the first time they are excluding coyotes and natural predators, and they are focusing on something with intelligence. And, of course, in their files, it must be a human. Now, another reward is out from the Tallahassee Humane Society of the United States because of these half-cat deaths in Florida. And you can read about the rewards, how to apply, if you have any information. And all of the investigators and all of the phone numbers are at earthfiles.com. And the family that has lost recently one of their family most beloved cats found cut in half, the Gibsons, they are offering also their own award in addition to the Humane Society. So at Earthfiles, you can go and see all of the phone numbers, all of the contacts for information about rewards for information, and the phone number for the Okaloosa County, Florida Sheriff's Office. That is one sheriff's office that is reaching out to the community, and they are asking people to come to them to give them information, because they are at such a loss about what keeps doing this in their community. And now, almost worse than the half-cats, is what has been happening in Kansas City, Missouri. On August 14, 2007, a six-month-old female Rottweiler dog named Misty was found near the Kansas City Museum in the northeast end of town with most of her left hind leg cut off. The suffering dog was taken to the Raytown Animal Clinic for examination and treatment, where the remainder of her left leg had to be amputated. 1 week later, on August 21st, the same day that up in Barrie, one of the half cats was found, a second homeless Rottweiler was found with about half of its left leg cut off. That dog was taken to the Raytown Animal Clinic, where Dr. Heath Rose said that he would probably have to amputate again, as he had on Misty's leg. And he said, quote, to KSHB-TV in Kansas City, why is the main question? Why would this happen or occur? And that's yet to be known, which speaks for all of us. What would be the agenda, the motive, the intent of whatever has been behind global half-cat mutilations and dog mutilations around the planet going back to at least the early 1970s to this day, occurring periodically and sporadically, often in the same geographic areas over this long 30 years plus course of time? And no one has ever been seen, no one has ever been arrested, no one has ever been arraigned or convicted. And these half-cat mutilations and mutilations of dogs continue. And Whitley, I have never been able to find one piece of hard evidence that would link this awful phenomenon that keeps going to the big animal mutilation phenomena that I've also studied for nearly 30 years that is focused around animals such as cattle and horses and sheep and goats that we would call domestic farm animals. What is the difference between what happens to these two groups? Because the big animals are not found cut in half, but the cats and sometimes the dogs are. And could it possibly be the same intelligence behind both?
Well, Linda, I don't know. It is an absolutely terrifying report, and there are really, it comes down, as I was listening, I was thinking, to two different possibilities. One is, somebody is doing this for some reason, whether it's a reason we would approve of or not, I don't know, but that we definitely do not understand. The other possibility is that somebody has come here, or is here, or is of us, is human, in other words, come out of the dark, moving around the world, doing this because they are not sane. And that is incredibly chilling.
Or they want us to feel intimidation and fear because whatever does this knows that humans love their cats and their dogs.
Exactly. And, you know, and I keep always, you know, whenever these come up, I refer back to the few frightening, eerily elusive human mutilation cases that you and I have talked so much about over the years, the Todd Sees case and the others.
Right.
We just don't know, Linda. But thank you again for a great report. And, folks, one of these days, I just have a feeling deep in my bones we are gonna know. But one thing I do know, you will learn more every day, information of a kind you literally cannot get anywhere else in the world on Dreamland. Tune in again next week. This has been Whitley Strieber's Dreamland. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week with another journey to the extreme edge of controversy on Dreamland. Do not miss it.